Well, hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Hey, John.
Hey, John.
So what are we going to talk about this week?
The same thing we talk about every week, John.
Trying to take over the world?
No, man. This isn't Pinky in the Brain, okay? This is a politics podcast. So we're going to talk about COVID-19.
And we're going to talk about voting.
And things happening in state and federal courts related to those things.
And we're also going to talk about campaigning, because it's just about 2 weeks until Election Day, and it turns out we are still a swing state.
Yeah, I guess we are. And those other things are going on, too. So let's talk about it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, lawsuits related to COVID and lawsuits related to voting. Oh, and did we mention there's still a presidential campaign? Yeah, so as Sean alluded to in the intro, we are by name and reputation a politics podcast, but we can't really stop talking about the coronavirus, both because it has political implications and because especially now, I mean, it is the worst it has ever been in Wisconsin at this point. I think like 3 record-breaking days this week in terms of cases.
Yeah, I mean, if you just want to look at today as we're recording this, there was a new record for new COVID-19 cases in Wisconsin. 3,861. There was a new high for the 7-day average for new cases, which was more than 3,000 for the first time. And Wisconsin set a new record for COVID-19 hospitalizations, more than 1,100 for the first time. So it's just obviously bad out there. You know, it's bad and getting worse.
It's not good.
And so it naturally, the people that we cover are going to have things to say about that. And but a lot of it lately has come in the court system, you know, in terms of lawsuits against 2 orders that have come out of the Evers administration. One, restrictions on gatherings in an order that was issued by Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm. And the other, an order from Evers himself declaring a public health emergency that he used to issue Wisconsin's statewide mask mandate. So both of those have been challenged in court. There was some action in both of them this week, too.
So I guess the one we have more recent news on would be the one dealing with the size of gatherings in bars and restaurants that we had a suit filed and a ruling on this week.
Yeah, well, there's one more brand new case that technically has had news more recently than this one.
I guess you're right.
Yeah.
That was this afternoon.
It's time. It's COVID time.
By the time you listen to this podcast, there could be a new lawsuit. Who knows?
Right. They will all be old at that point.
I know you guys aren't Star Trek fans, but these lawsuits are just like tribbles.
I'll take your word for it.
I wish I knew what that meant.
If there's any crossover between this podcast and Star Trek fans, they'll get what I mean. Anyway, proceed.
For whatever it's worth, I did watch The Lion King, guys. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Ooh, well, dang, maybe at the end we'll have to talk about that a little bit, get your hot takes.
Yeah, maybe after all this uplifting news, we'll talk about The Lion King.
You watch the cartoon version, right? Not the new live-action
version?
I watched
them both, Laurel. I watched them both.
Oh, my gosh. That is quite the conversation that
like
we need to have.
Back to back? Yep. Dang.
I know. Yeah. And I have opinions, too.
All right. Well, this is very hard for me to transition from that.
Do it, though.
But,
do it.
Oh, man. So there was a new lawsuit filed this week. I think this was on Tuesday night, and it came from the Tavern League of Wisconsin. And they were suing to knock down the Evers administration's order limiting bar and restaurant capacity to 25% until November 6th. This was the order that Sean mentioned earlier that came directly from the DHS Secretary Andrea Palm. And in their argument, the Tavern League is saying that this new order violates the state Supreme Court decision in May that struck down the safer at home order, the stay at home order from the Evers administration. Basically, they're saying that if the Evers administration wants to pass any more restrictions on people or on businesses in terms of, you know, what capacity they can have, that they need to do it through the emergency rulemaking process with state lawmakers involved instead of going through the emergency order process, which is just, you know, a unilateral action by the administration.
Yeah. So the Evers administration argues, and, you know, we'll see, ultimately we're going to see what the Wisconsin Supreme Court thinks about this, but the Evers administration is saying we hit this very small piece of, you know, the state's authority, the DHS's authority to restrict gatherings. And so therefore we don't need to promulgate a rule. Legislature disagrees. However, the rule came about or the order came about, the Tavern League is not going to like it because they are kind of fundamentally opposed to statewide restrictions on how many people can be in their bars.
Yeah. I mean, when they put out a statement about this lawsuit being filed, they said that basically the restrictions that have been in place so far haven't done anything to stop the spread of COVID-19. And so there needs to be a different approach where, you know, businesses are allowed to continue doing what they need to do to be solvent, and, you know, public health needs to kind of work alongside that, not an either or situation. I think their statement said something like, kill COVID, not small business.
So I think you said sort of the next step we're looking at there is an appeal to the state Supreme Court?
Not yet. So what's going on with that one? I think we're just sort of assuming that that's where it's going to end up, but this is really early in the process. So what's happened now is that was filed on Tuesday night. The circuit court judge, which is the lowest level in Wisconsin for state cases, issued his order, his first order in the case on Wednesday morning, agreeing to temporarily block the emergency order, the restrictions on businesses, as the case moves forward. And he scheduled a hearing in the case for this coming Monday. So the Evers administration is going to come in. They're going to argue about why they have the authority to issue this, how it's not a violation of the May state Supreme Court order. Then this circuit court judge will make his decision. That could come as early as Monday, or it could be, you know, a couple days or weeks. I mean, sometimes it just really varies based on what the judge wants to do. And then it would go to an appeals court and then to the state Supreme Court, unless the Tavern League tries to get it to leap over the appeals court, which can sometimes happen by petitioning to move it right to the Supreme Court. Right, Sean? They can do that?
Yeah, but I think if they win at the lower court level, which I would think is a pretty good likelihood if a judge blocked the order almost as soon as he got the case, I would say that he is, you know, they have his attention. We'll put it that way. you know, they're not going to want to like rush the appeal process then. And also this order, I don't know how, of course it could be extended, but right now it's only scheduled to last until early November. So it could be that the order expires before the court case. Although, I mean, the way things are going, doesn't feel like COVID's going to go away by November. So
couldn't the Evers administration appeal it though quickly?
He could. They could. That is one option for them for sure.
So that's the COVID lawsuit related to gatherings. But jumping back and jumping forward, sort of as you alluded to, we also have news related to the Governor Evers' emergency declaration and the mask mandate that's tied to that.
Yes. So I know this can feel like a lot, but I'll try to summarize it this way. There have been basically two orders to come from the Evers administration. One came from the DHS secretary, Andrea Palm, that restricted gatherings, and that has been blocked. And that's the case involving the Tavern League that, that Laurel just talked about. The other order from the governor himself set up the mask mandate, and that is using a different law, a different set of powers. And that is now the subject of two lawsuits. So the first one was in Polk County Circuit Court. It was actually handled by St. Croix County Judge Michael Waterman. And in that case, Michael Waterman handed the governor a victory, at least in round one of that case. He denied a request by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty to issue a temporary injunction, you know, essentially to block the mask mandate. And said there's nothing in the law that prevents a governor from issuing multiple emergency declarations for the same emergency, you know, for COVID-19, which is what Will was arguing. So the other thing that the judge said is like, look, I'm reluctant to step in as a judge because the law spells out that the legislature can step in and block these orders, and they could step in tomorrow and do that. And they haven't done that. So he said, I'm not going to do it, basically. So that's the one case. Evers won in the early rounds. There's now a second case. This one was filed by Jure Fabik. He is a board member for the Heartland Institute, a conservative think tank. And that case is a petition for original action. So, you know, Laurel alluded to this earlier. He's trying to go directly to the state Supreme Court and ask the court to strike down the governor's emergency orders, effectively strike down his mask mandate. So that was just filed. The petition was filed Friday. The governor's administration, the governor actually, now has some time to respond to that. We don't know whether the Supreme Court will hear that case, but that would be a quicker way of getting it there. And all this will be interesting whenever it gets to the court, because we don't know how this court is going to rule on these questions. Because when this court struck down Safer at Home, it was a 5-2 conservative majority. That's now 4-3. And in the initial ruling, Judge Brian Hagedorn sided with the court's liberals in siding with the governor's administration. So there's different details to these cases. We don't know how Brian Hagedorn is going to side this time around, but whenever one of these cases gets there, that'll be kind of the first test.
And one of the things you pointed out there was what the judge said about the separation of powers, where he feels like he, as the judicial branch, doesn't have the power to suspend that order when the legislative branch does in fact have that power and they've chosen not to. And so we had some news today from a top Republican in the legislature about whether or not they were going to take that action themselves.
Yeah, and that came in an interview with PBS Wisconsin, where Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke, a Republican from Kaukauna, was asked if the legislature would vote to override the governor's emergency orders. And Jim Steinke said no. So kind of confirming our suspicions based on the statements we've seen come from the Assembly Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader, you know, they're criticizing the governor, but they're not saying we're going to bring people back to vote on this to repeal it. But a very, like a clear statement from Jim Steinke that that's not going to happen. We did hear from one rank and file lawmaker, the Journal Sentinel did, that they might come back after the election for a lame duck session to repeal the mask mandate. But Jim Steinke did not address that today. He just said, no, they're not going to repeal that order.
If they come back for a lame duck, then we're going to have to like call that lame duck 2.0 to differentiate it from the now infamous lame duck session of a couple years ago after Governor Evers was elected. This will be like the COVID lame duck session or something.
I'm just imagining if that were to happen, that would be like tensions feel pretty high right now. Like what happens if we throw a lame duck on top of that? Yikes.
All right. Well, switching gears from one genre of lawsuit to another genre of lawsuit, we also have some stuff, especially because we were off last week, but some news related to voting lawsuits before the upcoming presidential election.
We sure do. So there was a really big development last week in this case that's a federal case, and kind of a complicated one in that it's a consolidated case of several different lawsuits that were brought, some of them before the April presidential primary, some of them after, but they all have to do with voting in Wisconsin during the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's the state Democratic Party, the National Democratic Party, and a coalition of a number of different groups, the League of Women Voters, Disability Rights Wisconsin, a number of other groups, trying to get things like the deadline extended for absentee ballots to get back to election officials, the deadline extended for online voter registration. Those are kind of the biggies. So that's kind of what's at stake there. The big news that we got last week was that the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago actually overturned the district court's ruling and allowed the previous, you know, existing state law to go back into effect. So that takes away the extensions for the absentee ballots to get to clerks. It takes away the extension for online voter registration, basically sends everything back to square one in terms of, you know, these legal challenges, makes it like everything was before the COVID-19 pandemic. And Sean actually covered this Seventh Circuit decision more closely than I did. And I think it's safe to say, Sean, that the dissenting opinion from one of the judges on the panel that heard this case in the Seventh Circuit was pretty, shall we say, forcefully worded? Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, very much. Because, I mean, the Seventh Circuit panel that heard this case, it was three judges who had been appointed by Republican presidents. You know, Judge Frank Easterbrook was nominated by President Ronald Reagan. Amy St. Eve, nominated by President Donald Trump. And then Ilana Robner, who was nominated by President George H.W. Bush. And it was Judge Robner's dissent that was scathing. I feel like reporters use that word a lot when we talk about dissents in court cases. But, man, this one was scathing.
Yeah, it's
pretty
cliche.
It's cliche, but this one was hot fire, John. And I'm going to use that in my next web story. And if you take it out, then you're cliche, buddy. So
whatever, man.
Yeah, she said, quote, "The inevitable result of the court's decision today will be that many thousands of Wisconsin citizens will lose their right to vote despite doing everything they reasonably can to exercise it. This is a travesty." She was also critical of the majority and of the legislature for kind of downplaying the severity of the pandemic. She says, "Today, in the midst of a pandemic and significantly slowed mail delivery, this court leaves voters to their own devices. Good luck and God bless Wisconsin. You're going to need it." So that's how she closed it. You don't read that every day.
That's pretty clear.
It was.
The Edward R. Murrow sign off there.
Good night,
you're
going to
need it. Yeah. I don't remember that part. The rest
it
of
was it implied.
They named a movie after it. Good night and good luck. Parentheses.
It's
you're gonna need it.
It's the sequel. The Judge Robner sequel. So, okay. So what was at issue with this case? The reason the majority in this 2-1 panel decided Wisconsin could not have this 6-day extension to count absentee ballots is because of this Purcell principle that has been it's used all the time when it comes to election cases. It's referring to a case that was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. And like really loosely speaking, it's this idea that the U.S. Supreme Court has laid down that courts shouldn't make changes to election rules close to election day. But nobody knows like what too close is, right? Like this one was deemed too close by these two judges. Judge Robner disagreed. You know, she said, what if if they had done it in May, it would have like been called premature, basically. And so this is now being appealed by Democrats to the United States Supreme Court. And kind of I think the foundation of their argument is that, look, Wisconsin did this 6-day extension thing back in April, and the U.S. Supreme Court did not overturn it then. And that's what we're seeking now. So why might this matter? Well, in April, the 6-day extension, coupled with other changes, resulted in 79,000 ballots being counted that otherwise would not have been counted, according to a review by the Wisconsin Elections Commission. So the thought is that because of the influx of absentee ballots, this 6-day extension might allow more of them that were sent on time to be counted. I don't know how the U.S. Supreme Court is going to view this. They don't even have to hear the case if they don't want to. You know, most cases that are appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court are not heard, but that's where it's at right now.
Well, that's a good, fine discussion of all of the legal wrangling that's going on about voting in the election that's coming up in about 2 weeks now. But we also wanted to talk about the election itself a little bit, I think, and what the candidates are doing and some other stuff going on related to that.
Yeah. Can we talk about it as though it's in the form of a lawsuit, though? Because I forget how to cover things when they're not like when there's not like a brief and emotions.
I suppose.
And stuff.
Yeah.
No, not really.
How about this? Donald Trump is going to make an appeal to Wisconsin voters this weekend.
Ooh. Eh? Very good.
Thank you. Yeah.
I wish I had our gavel handy. I would just bang the gavel for fun.
Where is that? Is that still like at the office?
That's at my abandoned office at Wisconsin Public Radio, the place we used to see each other in person.
Oh man! So what? Sorry, John. Were you gonna ask a question?
No, I was just making a noise.
Ah,
go continue.
Well, I was just going to say that I think this visit by the president is particularly notable because it's not like a presidential visit is all that uncommon for us this year. He's been to Wisconsin several times, but this is his first visit post-COVID-19 diagnosis and treatment. His actual this trip was supposed to happen the week that he was diagnosed, the Saturday after, and so it was canceled and rescheduled to this weekend. So, the president coming, and I'm sure his treatment for COVID and his recovery will be a big part of his remarks to the Janesville audience tomorrow. And that's a pretty big deal. I mean, back on the campaign trail in Wisconsin.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, the last time we recorded, we had, I don't even remember exactly what our theme was, but it was something along the lines of 2020 continues to blow our minds, right? And it was the news that day was like President Trump had COVID-19, and then he went to the hospital for COVID-19, and like the Janesville and Green Bay rallies were canceled as Wisconsin saw a spike in COVID-19 cases. Well, so the president is now coming to Janesville as Wisconsin's COVID-19 cases continue to just skyrocket. And I say again, as we do like weekly, what a year when 2 weeks can feel like forever ago.
So the president is coming again this weekend, or by the time you listen to this, maybe he's already been here. The vice president was also here, you know, some number of days ago recently, but who can remember exactly? And it's sort of part of Wisconsin political lore at this point that Hillary Clinton supposedly made an error in not coming to Wisconsin during the 2016 campaign cycle, and she ended up losing here. Joe Biden has been here a couple of times, at least in recent months, but doesn't seem to be planning as many appearances as President Trump is. I mean, like, is history sort of repeating itself here?
So, Laurel, you want to... I kind of want to jump in here first, and then I know you have things to say about this topic, because yes. You just worked on like an opus about polling trends in Wisconsin that's going to run next week on WPR and at WPR.org. But I'm gonna chime in here first and say the three of us are very humble, and we're humbled by our inability to predict the future. Basically in 2016. And I think we all know here that like, look, we're not going to say what's going to happen in this election, right?
Hey, speak for yourself. I have the ability to time travel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, a future version of you could tell us what's going to happen probably by this point. Future.
Humble sir, I am not.
That's true. Anyway, that sort of disclaimer aside, I think, yes, Joe Biden has not been here a ton. He hasn't had like a big Bruce Springsteen rally because Democrats aren't going to do that in the year 2020. But he has spent a lot of money in Wisconsin. I mean, there's a huge Joe Biden presence on the airwaves here. Wisconsin Democrats are raising a ton of money. And I think Wisconsin Democrats are generally like freaked out by what happened in 2016 and don't want to repeat it. So I think to say that like Biden has slept on this, or the Biden campaign or Democrats generally have slept on Wisconsin this time, would just be wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's an entirely different situation than it was in 2016. I mean, arguably it's part of their campaign and part of their strategy and part of their messaging to not be here, to not have in-person events that are going to draw crowds. I think it's important to mention that while, you know, Joe Biden hasn't been here more than a couple times over the past several months, there have been other in-person things. There's actually an in-person event coming up this weekend. Elizabeth Warren is going to be in Madison and Milwaukee doing, and I honestly don't know what this means, and I'm interested in finding out what it means and seeing how it plays out, but she's doing drive-up events. I don't know if it's like Elizabeth Warren at like an old time movie theater drive-in situation on a screen. Everybody gets like the speaker in their car window.
That would be a drive-in event. I'm just assuming she's going to be in a minivan. The voters are going to be inside working at a fast food restaurant. She will drive up to the intercom, tell them why they should vote for Joe Biden, also order a custard, and then she will leave.
I like your idea better. I thought I was pretty into the old-timey drive-in movie thing, but...
Ma'am, this is an Arby's.
There was another thing. Speaking of ad money, as we were a minute ago, Joe Biden isn't the only prominent Democrat running ads in Wisconsin at the moment.
So this is so interesting, and I know that Sean is eager to talk about it because there are a lot of nuances to it. But the governor, actually, who is not, incidentally, spoiler alert, on the ballot this year, has taken out a six-figure ad buy in the state talking about his response to COVID-19 and defending it and criticizing the Republican state legislature for how it's approached the pandemic. So this is a really unusual thing for a candidate who's, well, a person who's not a candidate.
Yeah, he's not a candidate.
Right, a candidate who's not a candidate to be doing.
Yeah, it's not like there aren't enough campaign ads on the air right now, you know? Like, there is a presidential election that's basically happening now. Hundreds of thousands of people have already voted absentee. Tony Evers is not on the ballot. He's not on the ballot for another 2 years if he runs again. So it's really unusual to see him running an ad right now. And he's differentiating himself on COVID-19. He's specifically criticizing Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, for their response. He is criticizing Donald Trump for his response. So in a way, kind of, it's kind of a presidential ad in a way. So he can do this whenever he wants. Legally, there's nothing keeping a governor's campaign from running an ad at any point in the campaign cycle. But why might he be doing it now? Well, he is facing a recall effort. There is a recall petition that is being circulated against Tony Evers. What happens under Wisconsin recall law when that happens? The target of the recall can raise unlimited funds. So I don't know how this campaign ad is being funded confidently. Like, I don't know. We don't have that campaign finance report in front of us right now. But I do know that there is nothing right now stopping the governor from going to a billionaire and saying, hey, I could use a few million dollars to run an ad. Okay. I mean, he can do that legally in Wisconsin, the same way that Governor Walker could and did use that law to benefit his own fundraising when he was the subject of a recall. So that's super interesting. And also just interesting that, like, this sort of back and forth between the governor and legislative leaders is not just like a spat in the halls of the Capitol or a Twitter fight between whoever on staff runs their Twitter accounts. It is a fight that the governor has taken to the airwaves in the form of a campaign ad.
Yeah, see, that's something that's sort of interesting to me. I have a couple of, like, theories there, or questions, or, you know, half-formed thoughts. But, like, one, could this potentially be a way for the governor to sort of go on the offensive and turn up the heat on lawmakers in terms of their handling of COVID? Or, you know, also sort of more tangentially, we know the former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish at some point a few weeks ago released sort of a generic ad about a group that she's put together for conservative solutions to Wisconsin, which was sort of seen as a, you know, trial balloon for what many are predicting could be a challenge to Evers if he runs again, a run for governor from her. So, like, is this just like a multi-purpose tool, a Swiss Army knife of ads to address the recall, to potentially make Republican lawmakers look not so great on their COVID response, and also a nod towards Becky Clayfish?
Well, to answer your 10-part question, John.
Oh, and also too, Democrats are fighting to preserve a non-veto-proof majority, or trying to fight the Republicans from getting a veto-proof majority in the legislature. So also tag that on to the Swiss Army knife.
Whew. Well, I'm not sure we can give you definitive factual answers on that. So
no, tell me.
I'll give you a lukewarm take instead.
Okay.
I think it illustrates the degree to which Tony Evers and Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald are dug in on kind of their positions. You know, this is not like the days of like old time Wisconsin politics where people would sit down in a room and cut a deal with members of both parties. This is a situation where the governor and legislative leaders have a lot of animosity toward one another. And yes, also there is a presidential election happening right now. And I don't see how you look at that ad and think it does anything, but like, it certainly doesn't hurt Democrats, right? It's kind of targeting the president on an issue where he is weak at a time when COVID-19 is horrible. So how's that lukewarm take, guys? Good?
Yeah.
You got one, Laurel?
Works for me. No?
I think that was just the perfect temperature.
Yeah. Like,
just leave it at that.
It's like 100, 130 degrees or so. You know, it's not cold water.
You could use that to sous vide some chicken.
Yep.
Anyway, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Yeah, so we may be spending a lot of time these days talking about lawsuits and lawsuits, but it's important, and it can still be kind of fun. So if you'd like to get new episodes about lawsuits delivered to you almost every single week, you can subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. While you're there, leave a rating or review of the show to help other people find it. And if you'd like to go back in time and listen to some podcasts about lawsuits and non-lawsuit things, our old episodes are available anytime at wpr.org/politicspodcast. So The Lion King, Sean.
Here's my definitive take on The Lion King, is it's all downhill after Mufasa dies.
Well, I mean, there's the eventual like reclamation
whole movie.
Of Pride
new,
Rock.
New King, what's his name? Like, I don't even know. But
Scar.
He's not his dad. That's all I'll say.
You're not taking this seriously. This is not a real conversation about The Lion King. If you're like, the new king, what's his name?
I can't remember it right now, but I liked that Mufasa guy. He was something special. Sounded like James Earl Jones in both movies. That's great.